Tommy Timing
is a proud member
of the pod.
Stop screwing it up.
Of the Comics Podcast Network.
Bitch. Welcome to episode 111 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as not Brent Cassina and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. It is Raph, Chris, and myself reviewing Scott Pilgrim. We reviewed it when it came out, and as usual, I waited to put it out. But hey, it's still in 800 theaters, so maybe you'll still have a chance to see it. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey guys, so yeah, as stated, this is indeed the Scott Pilgrim episode of Comic Timing, episode 111. This was recorded at the apartment with Raph, Chris, and myself, so there's no Brent on this episode. He does have some takes on Scott Pilgrim that will be on the next episode, which is the Batman Under the Red Hood episode that'll be coming out as episode 112, so look forward to that. But yeah, this is our basis of it, really. We do go into major spoilers for both the books and the movie. So if you have not read the books or you have not seen the movie, you might want to skip this episode. Just a heads up there. If you haven't seen the movie, it's still in 800 theaters, which means it's still in some random places here and there. So, you know, you can see it there. But if not, wait for DVD. Watch it on Netflix. Watch it on Blu-ray, on DVD, whatever you can do. Just make sure to support this movie in one way or another because it deserves it because it's really, really good, as you'll hear in our review. I will go through the DCBS books real quick here as September is now upon us. So we have ourselves some new review corner picks. So I will give them to you right now. Beginning with Image, we have Utopian number 1, written by Mark Guggenheim and Tara Butters. Art and cover by Ryan Bodenheim and Mark Engelhart. So we've got ourselves a new Mark Guggenheim book here from Amazing Spider-Man and Resurrection. And Ryan Bodenheim of Red Mass for Mars and Aliza Tagger of Serenity are the team on this book here. And it looks like it's a new superhero book out from Image. So it could be pretty cool. 50% off for $1.49, regular price of $2.99. So you're getting that DCB service discount on this. Over in Batman Land, we've got David Finch writing and drawing Batman the Dark Knight. 75% off for this first issue here. The beginning of a new era for Batman as Bruce Wayne returns. Oh no's spoilers. Batman Inc. will be done by Grant Morrison, and Batman the Dark Knight will be done by David Finch. So that will be very, very cool. And we're covering Batman the Dark Knight number 1 here for the review corner. 75% off of $3.99 for 99 cents this month. And a milestone issue over in Marvel for our pick, Thunderbolts number 150. It's written by Jeff Parker, penciled by Kev Walker, covered by Greg Land. Oh, noes. There's a Greg Land cover involved. Well, look past the Greg Land cover and open it up, and you'll find probably a good story and art inside because Parker and Walker have been knocking it out of the park. Pun totally intended on this book since Jeff Parker started, so this should be pretty cool here. 96-page, 150th issue blowout, as just like old times, it's Thunderbolts versus Avengers here. So that should be a lot of fun. 50% off of $4.99 for $2.49 discount here. But again, you're getting more pages than usual. I don't know how many of those will be reprints, but this will be a 96-page book for $2.49 from DCBS this month. So look forward to that. And make sure to use the promo code CT8 when checking out from DCBS for the first time. And you will be able to get 8% off on your first order with DCBS Discount Comic Book Service. Check it out at dcbservice.com. And I'll give you guys some other quick tips here. Thunder Agents number 1, 75% off this month for 99 cents. The Axe Cop trade paperback is 53% off for $7.04. That's one of Zach Krusey's favorite webcomics. Hilarious comic by written by a 5-year-old and drawn by his 29-year-old brother. So that's pretty cool. We got Doctor Strange 50% off for $12.49. The Steve Ditko era of Doctor Strange. Vampirella number one, 75% off for 99 cents. You get the idea here. Plenty of great discounts at DCBS, DCBService.com. Enjoy them. So without further ado, here we go with Scott Pilgrim.
Mr. Pilgrim! I'm Ramona's first evil ex-boyfriend.
What?
Scott Pilgrim came out and 10 people saw it, which is not good, because if we want more movies to come out that are based on things that us geek nerds like, it has to actually do money in order for that to continue to happen. Raph, did you enjoy the movie, and why did it fail?
I have a couple of theories on that, but yes, I enjoyed the movie. I think it's one of the most fun comic book adaptations ever. I thought I'd hate Michael Cera, and I didn't mind him at all, and he was actually pretty okay. And we're gonna go have brunch next week. He's a really cool guy.
That was a great scene.
Yeah, I think actually part of the reason I think it failed is because, well, one thing is I think it's a little too niche specific, because it definitely is like a kid in the 90s / 80s movie.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely plays on stuff that we all know and we all think is funny and care about. And the other thing is when you have 14 screenings in each major city before it comes out, and the people who go to these screenings are your target audience, and your target audience is broke, they're like, hey, dude, Scott Pilgrim's finally out.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, but we saw it last week, and I don't really got money for it, well, so, like, whatever.
I was originally planning on seeing that very weekend two movies back-to-back. I was going to see Expendables and Scott Pilgrim back-to-back, but I got into Expendables for free, and I got into Scott Pilgrim for free. The difference being, I was the only one of my friends that got into Expendables for free, and basically everybody I go to movies with got into Scott Pilgrim for free, so there was no reason to go and pay the money for it right away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you're going to see movies for free, what's the point of paying money for it, you know? You already seen it a couple of times. Me and Apollo, we wanted to see Expendables like four times at the movie theaters for free, you know?
We're talking about Scott Pilgrim. We're not talking about the Expendables. You can save that for when you eventually talk about the Expendables just to yourself.
Well, you know, I just think Adrian might like the movie, you know, because it's all about, like, tough guys, and she likes me, and she might like tough guys, you know?
Yeah. So, anyway, back to what we were talking about. I really had no reason to, you know, run out and see it because I'd already seen it for free. And that was, I think that was, like, all over Twitter for the last 2 weeks, I've been seeing people coming out of screenings and saying it was great. You got to pay for the movie in order for it to do well.
Yeah, that's, and whose fault is that? That's Universal's fault for not supporting the movie.
Yeah.
By, I mean, you know, it's awesome for us because we got to see it for free, but in the long run... You know, I don't know how well this movie's going to do. How much exactly did it make?
It made $10 million.
Ouch. And how much did Expendables make? Expendables is number one, I know.
Yeah, Expendables made, what, $30 million, I think?
Hey, you know, I mean, those are good numbers, you know. I think Scott Pilgrim, he had a shot against me, but, you know, I don't think he could have beat me.
Yes, obviously that was the case. But, yeah, no, there was a major difference there between the first place and the fifth place Scott Pilgrim, which lost out to, yet again, Inception getting more than $10 million for a week.
What can I say? Everyone loves the movie with the farty horn.
Well, Inception's a great movie. It's just, I'm sure Universal was thinking, you know, they'd at least top Inception, which has been out for a few weeks, and that didn't even happen.
But it's got farty horn in the trailer.
Yeah. All right, well, Chris, your thoughts, your opinions on Mr. Pilgrim.
I don't think Universal expected it to beat The Expendables. As a mutual friend of ours pointed out, that just the names in Expendables were the marketing. You know, Sylvester Stallone, Dolph Lundgren, Jet Li, Jason Statham, you know, Terry Crews, Mickey Rourke, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis.
Oh!
How many more names do I have there?
God, Batman, well, Superman was in the other one, so...
Superman, Punisher, and Human Torch / Captain America.
That's the other movie.
Yeah, that's the other one.
The marketing for Scott Pilgrim, I think, was entirely badly aimed. Mm-hmm. That's a terrible sentence. Entirely badly aimed. Terrible sentence. The marketing was ill-conceived.
Better.
Because, I mean, they were like, oh, look, we're at Comic-Con. We've plastered a hotel and we're having preview screenings and everybody's so hyped up. But, like, Comic-Con is not a cure-all for all your marketing needs. Oh, look, the geeks have power. No, we don't. No, we don't.
Right.
If we did, certain TV shows would not be canceled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Firefly did so well.
Yeah, I know. Serenity's great box office numbers. Every time they make a movie that they think is going to appeal to that specific crowd of nerds or geeks, I'm not going to say geek nerds, it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, well.
Or every time they make a movie that they think is going to appeal to that crowd, you know, like Snakes on a Plane or Serenity, it doesn't do well.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone thinks, oh, all my friends bought this DVD set. But guess what? We're not everybody else. All my friends watched this show. Yeah, I believe it was the Futon critic that put it best when they said in one of their articles, if you are reading this, you are not the average person. What you like doesn't matter.
Right, right. Yeah. And the average person is going to go see The Expendables because it's a lot of men. And it's testosterone-driven. So the men are going to go see it because it's Stallone and his amazing friends, while the women are going to go see it because Jason Statham is shirtless for a while.
Women will go see The Expendables, and the really sissy women will go see Eat, Pray, Love.
Sissy woman!
It was a Roberts weekend. That's what it was. I mean, Julia Roberts and Eric Roberts cleaned house this weekend, man. I mean... Damn.
I know.
They're rich bastards.
That's probably first time in his life that Eric Roberts gets to give the finger to his sister.
Oh, that sounds so wrong.
Ew, incest.
I didn't say it. Ew. You did. You pervert. Ew. Stop touching Raph's leg.
I'm not touching Raph's leg.
Oh, that's... Don't... I have no hair or whatever.
Well, I mean, you enjoyed Scott Pilgrim, though, right?
As the female audience... Oh, screw that. I did enjoy it. I thought it was a faithful adaptation of the graphic novel. I think it could do a good job of getting people interested in the graphic novels, judging by the sales on Amazon, New York Times bestseller list, blah, 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 blah. But a lot of people had never heard of the movie, don't know what it's about, weren't planning to really go see it in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, if I ask my mom, what are you going to go see? She'll probably rent Expendables. She might have actually paid for it if she wasn't so freaking cheap. She's definitely going to rent Eat, Pray, Love, a touching story of Julia Roberts traveling through India, learning about life, love, and...
Praying.
Yeah.
and yes, and eating. Thank you.
Eating.
Thank
There's
you.
Eating. There's lots of eating.
Yes.
But in the movie, she's fat.
Oh, yeah?
And that's the real truth of life. You get fat.
Okay, I see. Another thing is that to us, Scott Pilgrim was a phenomenon because the Volume 6 sold, 100,000 copies in its first week or whatever?
Right.
And you compare that to something like Harry Potter that sold in the millions, where, there is no comparison, really, between the comic book world and everybody else's,
favorites. People think they give a fuck about us, but they don't, so I don't like you.
Well, Raph, we live in a world where we're very insular. You know, it's very difficult for people that are not comic book fans to get into properties that are not comic book driven. I mean,
this is the first time I left my house in months. I'm just saying.
Well, like for example, the Spider-Man movies, those were accessible at least because those weren't based on a specific thing. It was just Spider-Man, he was swinging around, yada, yada, yada.
And he was pointing at girls.
Right.
Superman. And we can't get behind that.
I think it's more that Spider-Man is iconic.
Yeah.
And they keep trying to bring new properties to the screen, but they're not iconic.
Right.
You can sell Batman or Superman merely based on the name alone, no matter how crappy the movie. Batman and Robin made a suck nuts, but I'm pretty sure it still made some money.
Oh, it certainly did. Yeah, no. Yeah. It made money on the fact that it was a Batman movie alone. That's really all you need to do. You put Batman's name in front of anything, and it's going to sell.
Batmanuel!
Wee. But Incredible Hulk, that confuses me, because
it did well.
Well, it did well, but not nearly as well as they wanted it to.
It didn't do better than the previous movie.
Yes.
So as a test as to whether Marvel Studios could take over their own properties and churn out better movies that made more money, it was a failure. Mm-hmm. Financially, it still broke even and, did everything it was supposed to do. It's just it didn't prove anything in terms of Marvel Studios owning their own movies.
Mm-hmm. And talking about other properties, what did Kick-Ass do right that Scott Pilgrim did wrong?
came out in May when most summer movies come out, as opposed to August where they dump everything they don't give a shit about.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, yay.
Yay. Who was trying to say that that August was actually a good time for movies to come out? Because, I mean, you had that list of movies that came out until, like...
It was a post on Bleeding Cool, and yeah, I remember that. When did Kick-Ass come out?
Kick-Ass came out...
It wasn't May.
April.
It was, like, April.
It was
was early in the year, yeah. No, it was a post on Bleeding Cool. Somebody, you know, people were trying to figure out, oh, what went wrong with Scott Pilgrim? And somebody said, well, it's because it's August. That's when they put the movies they don't give a shit about. And somebody's like, that's bullshit. Because all these movies, you know, they care. And I listed all these movies that, like, Julie and Julia.
Yeah.
And you know, other things. They were like, oh, this did really well. And I'm like, no, it didn't. They didn't. You want me to look up that post?
Yeah, please do.
Wait,
yeah.
But before that, let me list some horrible movies I saw in the month of August. Mm-hmm. The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Uh-huh.
Crocodile Hunter the movie. Mm-hmm. Lots of bad movies.
Yeah.
Battlefield Earth.
Well, because you're getting closer and closer to the beginning of school. So what that means is that usually people in August are going to be outside at the beach, hanging out with their friends. They're not really going to be in movie theaters nearly as much as they would be, say, at the beginning of the summer. I mean, depending on where you are in the country, the weather's getting cooler as opposed to warmer once late August rolls around. I have no idea what that was. We'll check it later.
I blame you.
Of course you do. That's what we're dealing with here. You know, it's the end of summer blues, and that happens with movies as well.
Yeah, and actually, when I went to see the screening, I was there with Kevin Kahn, who plays the not-have-a-job Skeletor.
Nice.
He even said about the ad campaign, like, he didn't even know what the movie was about, even though he had read Scott Pilgrim. It's like,
right. Yeah,
if you remember the commercials, they're kind of crappy. They're just random. It's like, boy falls in love with girl. Oh, video game music! Yay! And that's it.
All the people around me at work had no idea what the hell Scott Pilgrim was. And
it's a shame.
I mean, even though they've been blasting the ads, they've been blasting, stuff online. They've been putting advertisements anywhere that they can possibly put them. It still didn't permeate. Okay.
August. This is Jason A. Quest from Neverpedia.com. August is one of the times of year when studios traditionally have dumped things they knew wouldn't be big hits anyway, because it's when movie attendance sags. If you thought something had the potential to get boff a box office, you released it at the beginning of the summer or during the holidays. That's in all caps. Not all caps, but... But if you released it in August, you could flog a lame fart gag vehicle for an SNL alum as America's number one comedy when it came in at number three on opening weekend and behind the ninth weekend of a big-budget action film and the 15th weekend of a tearjerker about an underdog athlete. The problem is that the studios have figured that out and are trying to use this valley to make otherwise mid-list films, like the three that opened this weekend, look bigger, with the result that they're instead finding that they have actual competition and not for a very large audience. And then we go 2, 3, 4 posts down, and this is Ryard. Says, I'm sorry, but that's sour grapes. In 2009, August saw the release of Julie and Julia, G.I. Joe, District 9, Inglourious Basterds, and The Time Traveler's Wife. The previous year saw The Mummy, Tropic Thunder, Pineapple Express, and The Clone Wars. 2007, The Bourne Ultimatum, Underdog, Rush Hour 3, and Superbad, when The Simpsons movie the last week of July. Some of those movies are tentpoles. Some are going for the cult status. Sfart as Scott Pilgrim. They couldn't decide if they wanted to go blockbuster or cult with this movie, although people are now defending the cult aspect. And I do think the performance reflects some of that, based on the reaction to the advertisements we've seen here. But don't blame the month. That's just desperate. I won't read the rest of the post.
Yeah. Almost every single movie that he listed was dumped.
Yeah, they're only a handful.
No, they're good movies, they're aimed more for the Oscar market, others just nobody cares.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds, Julie and Julia, you know, those are the
Bourne Ultimatum.
Bourne Ultimatum. I don't know if that was really geared towards the Oscars.
No, but it was, actually, Bourne Ultimatum, the Bourne series was always late July, early August.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them came out that time,
right.
So it's not, it's just tradition.
Yeah, and when do the Twilight movies come out? They come in June or...
Wait, what?
November.
Well, no, or November.
What's Twilight?
Twilight is actually, while we're talking about Scott Pilgrim, we need to bring up the fact that there were multiple reviewers that called Scott Pilgrim Twilight for Boys. And
that might have actually contributed a little bit. That for some reason the media decided that this is the Twilight for boys, even though there are plenty of girls that are into Scott Pilgrim. In fact, sometimes more girls are into Scott Pilgrim than guys, depending on where you are. And be serious with your response, please. All right.
No. I'm just. All right. Okay. I find that very insulting.
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim has. The series has something called substance,
mm-hmm.
good storytelling,
yeah.
good plot,
mm-hmm.
proper grammar,
yeah.
and class.
Yeah.
Twilight is just about a shiny vampire who wants to have sex with a girl and burst her stomach with a baby. And it's creepy, and it's weird,
and
Scott Pilgrim is nothing like that, and how dare you insult me.
And a shirtless werewolf.
And a shirtless, stupid werewolf.
Yeah.
Stupid reviewers don't understand anything.
And a werewolf that magically becomes, like, you know, double its size when it becomes an actual wolf, which has always been weird.
I know nothing of the Twilight series, so all this you're telling me is new and frightening to me.
All right, well, Chris, Twilight for boys, what the hell?
First of all, I think people are way too mean to Twilight, and I'm not a Twilight fan.
Yeah.
I saw the movie, the first two movies anyway, kind of thought they were pretty crappy. Mm-hmm. But they do their job. People go see the movies, they read the books.
Right.
So you kind of have to give them a little slack there. Like, Stephanie Meyer found her niche.
Mm-hmm. I mean, good for her. I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying I've read part of the first book, and I thought it was horrible.
But, I mean, they said that
the audience.
Yeah,
it kind of depends on what side you're going to looking from it. If you want something that's like supposed to be a cultural phenomenon, I don't think it's insulting so much as inaccurate, because clearly Scott Pilgrim is not doing that right now.
Right.
And it's far more esoteric, because Scott Pilgrim is so reliant on comic book as a visual reference and video games visually and even plot-wise, considering how fast they flip around in this movie, as well as the really awesome, you know, extra life ending.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, brilliantly done. Reminds me a lot of Run Lola Run.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with directly referencing video games as opposed to just utilizing a technique. But back to Twilight. I don't know. It is a little inaccurate, because it's a romantic comedy, and, you know, romance is usually the thing is, like, for women, not men,
right.
But it is nice to see them take something that is a romantic comedy and say, oh, this could be for boys. But I don't really think of it as a boy's story as much as Twilight is a girl's story.
Which is really interesting to me, because when I first heard of Scott Pilgrim, and I don't know if you had a similar experience, Rap, but when I first heard of Scott Pilgrim and I saw the reaction online and I saw who was reacting, my immediate thought, and yes, this might have also partially been because it was out of Oni, and Oni usually goes for a certain niche audience, I thought it was going to be a chick book. I thought it was going to be like a romance kind of book, even though it has the, you know, the video game audience. I didn't think I was going to like it at first. And when I finally sat down and read it, I mean, I went through all six volumes in like a week. I freaking loved it. But my initial reaction, because of who I saw reacting online, I thought it was going to be mostly for girls. The complete opposite seems to be the case with the reviewers for the movie.
Yeah, I started reading the book series like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I...
That means he's better than you.
Yes. Yeah.
So I didn't have
I'll fully admit, congratulations, Raph, you're a better comic book reader than me. Please continue.
I think when I first read it, you know what? Even if you go back to the first book,
mm-hmm.
it's... The majority of the first book is very much like a romance comic.
Right.
It's when Matthew Patel shows up and it becomes all this video game crazy super happy fun time,
mm-hmm.
that it becomes like totally all. I mean, not that the first part isn't good. It's just like
it takes a build.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like I kind of get this feeling that the mainstream tries to treat like the whole geek nerd subculture as sort of being gender neutral,
mm-hmm.
because I mean. Or, like, they don't think that we're not expected to watch The Expendables,
right.
because it's testosterone heavy, and we're supposed to watch Scott Pilgrim, because mm-hmm. it's got all the nerd references, but it's also a movie girls can get into.
And only guys play video games, according to most pop culture.
Yeah. So it's like, I kind of don't like that, but, I mean, I get it, but it's also, like, this, Scott Pilgrim has, like, a broad appeal. I think it's really, it's definitely, and this is what Brian Lee O'Malley says about it. He wrote it for, like, it's his ultimate 20-something story. And
right.
it's really, it is, because a lot of references they make are all something we understand. Like, even, like, one thing I think was great, like, is the one scene where in the movie where Knives, and this is minor spoiler, Knives finds out Scott went out with Envy, mm-hmm. and like they blur her face and do the whole colon circle thing, and yeah. and like, I mean, someone, maybe someone in their mid-30s might get it, but that's something we all get, and yeah. we're all laughing about, right. and it's really funny. So it's like, well, obscure nerdy reference.
There have been other people that have compared Scott Pilgrim, and I'm not sure if I agree with this either. There have been some people that have called it the Watchmen of the 90s generation, for people that grew up in the 90s that are now in their 20s.
I don't think that's...
That's insulting.
Yeah, I know. I first saw this on... I think Robot 6 originally posted about that. I could be wrong, but I remember seeing at least one reviewer state that about Scott Pilgrim. And I don't really see the comparison there.
Well,
but.
It's insulting because Watchmen is... I mean, I've read it like 3 times. The first time I read it, I just liked it as a superhero story. But the second time I read it, I had a deeper grasp of American history. And I will say that part of it was after watching Charlie Wilson's War, you know, written by Aaron Sorkin, starring, you know, Tom Hanks. It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of understood the whole thing, like, why we were still on the edge of nuclear war, because the Russians had never invaded Afghanistan, and thus the Cold War was nowhere near ending. And, I mean, basically, the Watchmen is, like, a historical lesson. It's a what-if a certain series of events involving people with superpowers had happened, and how it would affect American history yeah. and politics. It's a historical work. It talks about the mood of the time of 1986. It was still kind of weird back then. To say Scott Pilgrim is anything near that, there's nothing political in Scott Pilgrim whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's a romantic comedy with a bunch of video game jokes thrown in there.
Yeah.
Lots of references to shonen manga. I read an interview last night. Brian Lee O'Malley said that him and a friend of his had gotten this book that was published by Viz. Mm-hmm. It was like a parody of those How to Draw Manga books.
Yeah.
It was like How to Draw Manga Badly. Or any, no, Even a Monkey Can Draw Manga. That's the name of it. Viz Press 2002. I need to get a copy of this. But, you know, it's all of this. But there's nothing political. There's nothing intellectual. It's not meant to be anything
right.
more than, you know, romantic comedy, video game references, shonen,
yeah.
you know, manga references.
Well, and, I mean, I could see that perhaps people were thinking that because Watchmen is so steeped in 80s culture and 70s and 80s culture, that, you know, because Scott Pilgrim is so steeped in, you know, the 90s, that's why they're making that comparison. But I do fully agree. There's nothing political about Scott Pilgrim. There's nothing...
Canada, they
right.
barely have politics.
Yeah,
nope.
Come on. They have free healthcare and they have discount clothing stores. That's what they have. But...
Well,
we have discount clothing stores.
That's true, yeah. And they have Rogers Center and Rogers in general, which
and they have that castle.
Rogers is more
castle
evil than
it.
Yes,
yeah.
Rogers is more evil than AT&T or Verizon will ever be.
I've heard that.
Yeah, they're bitches, man. I mean, be happy that you never have to deal with any of the like roaming charges or data plans that they have up there.
Yay,
it's pretty bad.
Canada gets screwed.
Yay, but you know, I mean they. It's just, and this is nothing against Scott Pilgrim, but there's nothing, and this might even sound wrong out of my mouth when I'm saying it now, but there's nothing deep about Scott Pilgrim. It's popcorn. It's fun. It's exciting. It's entertaining. But there's nothing with deep meaning behind it, except for the growth of Scott as a person. That's,
you said that or I would have punched you.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Except for Scott as a person. But that's nothing political, and there's nothing really you can say about people who have grown up in the 90s, that specific society.
Yeah, I was thinking the only thing I could... I mean, because Watchmen is not just one thing. It's not just a superhero story. It's not an alternate history story. It's everything. It's everything, and it's like... It's also... It's all these different things. And, I mean, Scott, I think why I think people like to compare it to Watchmen, maybe it's just because I think Scott Pilgrim does have a little bit of depth. It's deconstructing your life in your 20s. It's
yeah.
all about music and mm-hmm. video games and pop references
right.
and having
right.
fun. And it's taking exploration in that. And really, you know, Scott growing, I mean, we're all in our mid to late 20s
yeah.
now. So
I can relate to a lot of the things that he's gone through.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, there's that one time that one evil ex you had to face that
we don't like to talk about her.
Right,
yeah.
right. You headbutted her into coins, and I thought that was kind of weird.
You don't want to fight my exes.
I don't.
One
want.
Of them knows jujitsu, and the other studied kendo.
Yeah, I would lose it about 8 seconds.
Well, you just have to become a vegan. You must not partake of the meat or the breast milk or the ovum of anything with a face.
I just didn't know that Superman was vegan.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I guess we'll get to actual review later. But the whole point, I talk loud.
You do talk very loud. Yes.
It's that Scott Pilgrim is really an exploration of what it means to be young. And I mean, and on some levels, it's really shallow, and you know, but that's how life is. When you're young, you're not really all that deep. And in some, you have your moments of where you know we actually learn something, and you. Right. I mean, you know, I think you know, all of us have pulled the sort of understanding out of our chest before. I mean, I used it to chop my carrots.
Yeah, right. That's what I used to make the carrots earlier.
That was delicious. It was really understanding good. Is yeah. delicious.
It's absolutely scrumptious. It is. Scrumptious is the word.
Scrum-dilly-umptious.
Yes. And something that Kick-Ass had that Scott Pilgrim did not have.
Hit Girl.
Yes, Hit Girl is definitely one of the things that it had, but it did have the superhero appeal that Scott Pilgrim does not necessarily have. Wherein at this point, superheroes I think are a lot more accepted than video games in film culture, at least, because there have been a lot more good superhero movies than there have been video game movies. I mean, I can count on one hand the amount of video game movies that have been good.
It's not being marketed as a video game movie, so to blame the fact that it's kind of a video game movie on the fact that it failed, that's not accurate. It's not. People see Resident Evil, and most people, okay, not most, a lot of people nowadays can look at Resident Evil and know that's a video game. My mom knows it's a video game. She doesn't care because they've managed to create an insular universe that doesn't require knowing the games to play, I mean, to watch the movies. But, oh God, I almost completely forgot where I was going to go with this. Oh, the whole acceptance of video games and versus comics, Kick-Ass versus Scott Pilgrim. Kick-Ass had a lot of advantages that Scott Pilgrim didn't have. I mean, one being that it's a straightforward superhero tale. Look, here's some guys in costumes. So that's one. Two, came out earlier in the year when during a period when people are going to go to the movies. Yes. Again, like we said, August, not a great month for movie going. Yes. I mean, your strongest periods of movie going tend to be the early summer. That would be May, June, and the first half of July. I mean, Kick-Ass came out a little before that, but they were riding off of things like C2E2. And then you have the holiday season, so that's, you know, late October, the Halloween weekend, November and December. Everything else is a dead zone. So if a movie comes out then, you can pretty much tell that the studio wanted to send it down.
Yeah.
And the third thing is the stars. Kick-Ass has Nicolas Cage.
Yep, as Batman.
While, you know, you can look at Scott Pilgrim, it's got a great cast. You know, it's got Michael Cera.
Superman. And
he's going to keep saying that. But we'll say their real names. Brendan Ralph and Chris Evans.
But there were no mega stars.
There were no mega stars. And their star of the movie, Michael Cera, is hated by a large segment of the American population because he's thought of as not being an actor. He's played George Michael Bluth in some form or another in almost every movie he's made since Arrested Development.
And what was great about this movie, and this can sort of segue a little bit into our basic reviews of the movie, is that I felt that this was the most Michael Cera has gotten out of that George Michael role in any of the movies that he's been in so far. Mind you, I have not seen that other one where he has the like the split personality thing, Youth in Revolt, where you know he does play like the typical Michael Cera character, and then the I'm suave Rico Suave character,
mildly evil.
Character.
Yeah.
But, you know, I might see that on DVD eventually. But still, out of all the ones that I've seen, he's been the same character. This one, he had that jerk quality to him in this.
Incidentally, I love that about the movie. I mean, I know we're going to segue eventually in the reviews, but I think one of the best parts was watching the movie and being like, oh my God, Scott Pilgrim is a fucking asshole. And that's one of the things that made the Scott Pilgrim series so good, is that Scott Pilgrim is not really that likable. I mean, you can like him on a certain level, but he's an idiot. He's insensitive. I mean, he's a huge jerk.
He's not like an overt... See, there are two types of douches. There's the intentional douche who knows that he's acting like a douchebag and doesn't care. And then there's the accidental douche who just... You know, he doesn't want to be mean, but he ends up doing it anyway.
But he has moments of both.
He does have... Well, I mean, but, like, his whole breakup with Knives, he didn't want to do it, but it was hard. So, like, it's like, he's almost... likable. But
the way he treats Kim.
Oh yeah, well the way he treated everyone before Ramona, right? Sort of. But when they talk about it at the party, he's like, "Well, I didn't think anything was wrong. Like, it's not. It's more naivete than him being an overt jerk."
No. He's a head case.
Yeah, he's a total head case.
His head is in the clouds more than any other character in the books or in the movie.
Hence, head case.
Right, and you know, yet again, saying I felt Michael Cera, while he might not have looked the part exactly.
See, that's my big problem. He didn't look exactly. Like this.
But who would have? Really? I mean, who would have?
I don't think anyone has 2 points in their sideburns.
No, I don't think so either.
And then they don't have 5 points at the back of their head.
Well, but still, I mean, like out of the current crop of young actors, okay, Michael Cera is the one that you had to pick because you needed somebody who was at least a little bit recognizable because you could not have gone into this movie with a no name spending $80 million on the production.
Yeah, that's one thing. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, I thought Michael Cera did a great job.
Yeah, it's just, so did I.
I wasn't comfortable with him being Scott in the beginning because he just doesn't look the part.
And the trailers left me cold originally.
Yeah,
I wasn't quite sure where he was going. But at the time, I didn't even know what Scott Pilgrim was supposed to sound like because I hadn't read the books.
Yeah, we watched the trailer together, and like the first half of it, we were like, is this supposed to be a romance story? Yeah. And then it gets all video gamey and awesome. It's like, all right, we're going to see Scott Pilgrim.
I liked the evil exes a lot more than I actually liked the main character of Scott Pilgrim going into it. And I came out of it liking the evil exes more than I actually liked Scott Pilgrim, but I was supposed to.
I know, bro.
And that's what's great about it. Gideon, perfect casting. Perfect casting.
Jason Schwartzman is the ultimate douchebag.
Exactly. The twins were, I mean, they didn't really do much.
They don't have personality in the original graphic novels.
They had a manga robot.
They mostly fight Scott with their robots. Right. You know, and that's something that's I kind of missed in the movie because in the manga, in that volume, I keep saying manga. Smack me if I use the word again because it's not accurate. I can go into this on another show if you need me to.
The Canadian graphic novel.
Yeah, the English language graphic novel. I mean, that was just the funny part of that whole volume is that Scott is like fighting these robots in the background, and the volume is actually about Ramona having to deal with the fact like I'm going out with Scott now. This is my life, and at some point I'm going to have to deal with all that other crap that I came to Canada to avoid. I mean, that's why the last volume, it's about Scott growing, but also Ramona growing to kind of finally stop running from the things that bother her.
Mm-hmm. And Patel was perfect.
Yes, he was.
I mean, he had that theater personality
Bollywood dance.
Oh my God. I mean, that had me sold on the movie. Actually, the entire first 25 to 30 minutes of the movie were flawless.
Yeah, they were. They totally were.
They were exactly the way that they should have been according to the books. They were almost identical to the actual books. And they paced it so perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
The quick cuts switching from location to location to location in conversation.
Yeah, that was great, man. Yeah, because then it's the passage of time without actually passing the time.
Right.
Also, yeah.
It's interesting that the movie takes place probably over maybe a month or two. Mm-hmm. While the
books take over a year.
Yeah, and I know that they did that because of filming, because they couldn't film over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. There was always going to be snow on the ground no matter what they did.
Right.
It definitely is a little weird, but, you know.
Yeah, well, because there's not enough time to have true emotional growth when you're only lasting a year. I mean, when you're only lasting a month as opposed to the year arc of the actual books.
Yeah, actually, and we talked about this before, but I guess we can go into the review. I mean, that was my one big problem with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a couple minor ones, but the big one is that Ramona has no character arc whatsoever.
I agree.
She is just there to be, for Scott Pilgrim to fall in love with, to be a bitch to him, and then to finally be there for him to fight for.
Yeah, I don't agree with some reviews that said that she was a dick the entire movie and that there was no way to relate to her. However, I do say that she did come off a little bit flat. Just because she didn't have that emotional arc that she needed to have.
She's not worth it. You know, Scott grows, and you can say, okay, here's a guy who definitely eventually deserves to have somebody because he's willing to make the changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole line from As Good As It Gets, you know, Jack Nicholson, you make me want to be a better man.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Ramona, she's not worth the trouble in the movie. I mean, they had a chance at the end when she goes to face down Gideon, and then they just kind of left it flat. I mean, Knives gets more fighting time in the end battle than Ramona does anything.
And actually, I agree with Robot Six's assessment that I would have been perfectly fine
if
Knives had wound up with Scott at the end of this movie.
And that he just learned that, you know, she's good. She's what's right for him and not Ramona. Right. But Ramona was the fling.
Yeah, and although she still had the emotional growth of letting go of Scott like she does in the actual books. Right. And that's totally the case. She is too good for him. Yeah. He's an asshole.
Yeah, well...
Wait, I gotta say it. I think we should have sex. Casual sex!
and that was, you know, another thing that they had to leave out from the movie, but maybe it's in the deleted scenes or something.
Well, see,
no. They couldn't do it because...
Well, yeah.
The passage of time, because the movie only takes place over a month, you don't get the whole thing with, oh, Knives is legal now. Because honestly, that is one of the, that's the closure for Scott and Knives in the books. Mm-hmm. It's like, she's legal now. I kiss her. It totally didn't work. Yeah. We totally would not have worked as a couple.
Yeah. And also, Ramona and Scott never move in together, so there's that whole arc doesn't really happen.
Yeah, if they had moved in together, I think Ramona would have been a little more redeemable, because at the end of the movie, it's like, hey, I'm going to run away now. Hey, I want to come with you. Okay. Yeah. And that's it. I mean, it's nice, but it's not real growth.
Yeah, I'll put a spoiler warning before this episode.
I think
by the way, because we're definitely spoiling everything here.
I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I don't give a shit either. I mean, all six volumes are out and the movie's out, so whatever.
Also, I mean, yeah, like going back to the fight, it should have been Ramona who backed up Scott, not Knives, because in the book she has the whole. She also gains the sword of love, you know, and then Scott with the sword of understanding and Ramona with the sword of love, they both beat Gideon, and that's how it should have been. I mean, like, eventually, right after she knees Gideon in the crotch in the movie, she should have pulled the sword out of her chest and been like, let's go.
The only way this whole thing would have been better is if somehow Wallace Wells wound up with the Sword of Omens.
Oh my god, yes.
Are we gonna just talk about Wallace now?
Okay. Oh my god. You deserve best supporting, alright?
He was awesome.
Kieran Culkin is... lights out above any expectations I had for Wallace, and he is Wallace Wells. Except I mean, he had him down perfectly.
I don't know if he's gay, but yeah, but he was
no. Well, all right, but he is in the movie. All right,
I know
the sex scene.
No, Wallace is gay, but I don't know if Kieran Culkin is gay. Is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah,
but
no, I know that.
He's the best gay character I've ever seen in a movie.
The four people in the bed.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
That was epic, man.
Yeah. It was pretty ridiculous. But, I mean, it was... I don't know. I think this is as best a betrayal as they could have done without it getting into any stereotypes or any sort of, like, meanness.
Ian knows I have a whole history going on recently with this.
Oh, yes.
But I think the reason why, you know, they were, like... The whole thing, like, where Wallace pops up in the bed because Scott woke up, and then, like, all of a sudden you get all these heads popping up, was mostly because they wanted to get some of the flamboyance in there, but they didn't have time to build a proper arc. Like, everyone's favorite Wallace scene, when Scott comes in and, like, two or three of Wallace's friends are there, and Wallace is, like, making cocktails in his underwear. I mean, that's, like, the classic Wallace, you know, ridiculous moment, and you can't really fit everything into the movie, so they, of course, had to kind of abbreviate it. Like, oh, look, Wallace is bringing strange friend home. I don't even know why they're staying in that apartment when Scott's there. I mean, because it's not like they can have sex with him while Scott's in the bed.
I'm sure you could.
They're just cohabitating in a very
weird... There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we'll talk more about the actual movie, and I'll pass it off to you people also, but Edgar Wright, there's no one else who could have directed this movie other than Edgar Wright.
I think there are plenty of directors who could have handled it, but I've seen Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, and those are his original properties. Yeah. I don't really know what else he could have done for an adaptation, but I think, you know, of the short list of people who would have done it right, you know, they definitely lucked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he did a great job.
Well, because even the editing style, I mean, there were a lot of his editing flair that came from, you know, both Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead that was present in here.
Yeah.
Including the, I mean, as I previously mentioned, you know, the quick cuts as the scenes change. I mean, that was in Hot Fuzz. There was a scene that was somewhat similar to that in Shaun of the Dead. You know, it's stuff that he's done before. It's stuff that he's learned from doing other movies, and he was able to adapt so well here. And the combination of the, you know, the video game sound effects and the video game, you know, setup.
KO!
versus, you
but
know?
There was a nice attention to detail, because I think Jeremy Parrish of 1UP.com, you know, of course said this is like the greatest video game movie ever made, but he said that adapting it into a movie actually did add elements that weren't present in the graphic novel, because we all remember the scene where they're trying to talk, I think they're trying to talk to Scott about knives or something, and Scott just goes, I learned the baseline for Final Fantasy II. And he actually plays it in the movie, so yeah. You actually, there's an added depth and level to that, and like, I mean, of course, the attention to detail. I mean, the fact, like, of course, Ian here was all like, "Hey, look, look, look! Nobuo Uematsu is credited. He's credited. He's credited." You know.
Yeah, and I mean, the songs by Beck.
Oh my god!
Freaking awesome!
Yeah. I love the Clash of Demonheads. My new favorite band. I just love Superman's like evil glares at Scott. Those are great.
Well, you know what? All right, fine. I'll let you talk mostly about the evil exes. And you know what? Give me your basic opinion on the movie, because I mean we've been jumping all over the place, and I've mostly been hogging the mic when it comes to the review. But I mean, what did you think overall? Give me your overall sense of what it achieved and what it might have failed.
I think that you kind of touched on it before. I think the first half with the first four exes was pretty spot on and accurate and everything. I'm not saying that the second half was necessarily bad, but I think the twins were sort of mishandled.
They rushed a lot.
Yeah, and I think the Gideon fight could have, like I said before with the whole Ramona thing, it could have been handled a little differently.
Yeah.
Another thing is, one thing I did like that they changed was they kept it focused on the music. It's all about the band, and it's all about fighting other bands. I think Because it does jump all over the place. There's all kinds of like esoteric references and all this random stuff that people wouldn't get.
Yeah.
People can hold on to the fact that they're competing to win this contract so they can put an album out, and they can get behind, oh, these evil exes are also tied in musically for the most part.
Right.
So I think that was a plus. Besides the twins, all the exes were terrific. I can go in order. Matthew Patel was terrific.
Yes.
I think his whole, like we said, the Bollywood dance number and his whole look, the whole pirate thing.
I mean, really, like, it was like he jumped off the page.
He really did.
Because he looked the part and he acted the part perfectly.
He totally did. Yeah. And, of course, my two favorite are the next two, which is Lucas Lee, played by Chris Evans.
You mean Luke Wilson?
Luke Wilson, totally.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't actually put that joke in.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's kind of concession.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I loved his over the top action hero voice. Hey, Pilgrim, I'm gonna take you down. and he was just awesome. I love the whole stunt team thing. Mm-hmm. And another thing I kind of like is that we haven't talked about is the fight choreography. It adds another. It would have been just a video game, comic book, music. Like homage. Now it's a kung fu movie homage too, because there's a lot of awesome kung fu.
Well, just like it is in the book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just you can't really see it in the book because he's not doing awesome kung fu moves.
One line we needed in the movie though that was not actually in the movie but was in the books was he's the greatest fighter in the province. You know, we didn't get that once, and I felt that was necessary.
We went to see it with a couple of people who hadn't actually read the books, and they were like, "Oh, gee, I really wish they had explained why Scott has all these fighting powers." I thought we were going to get a montage of him training, but instead he just goes right into it. And it's because this one line, and I never understand why they cut that stuff out of movies, because one line can make all the difference when it comes to stuff like that. Just to have someone say, while Scott is fighting Matthew Patel, it's like, is he, which is the line from the book, is he crazy? Doesn't he realize that Scott is the best fighter in the province?
Well,
such a short line that could have fixed a lot
of narrative
problems.
I'm sure it's in the deleted scenes, too, because I don't know why they would have cut it, but I guarantee you it's in the deleted scenes.
I think I do know why, because I think if you remember everyone's reaction after Scott knocks Matthew Patel back the first time, they're all totally shocked. I think they were going for the, holy crap, Scott Pilgrim can fight?
Yeah, but that's not what Scott Pilgrim
that's
is.
That's not true. I know. Yeah. I don't agree with it, but that seems to be what they wanted to go for.
Yeah.
That this was completely out of nowhere, which, I mean, yes, a lot of things are completely out of nowhere, but that didn't necessarily need to be one of them.
Which does add to the theory that a lot of this is happening in Scott's head.
Yeah.
Which, is a little bit less so in the books than it is in the movie.
No clue gets it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that is a possibility. Like, I mean, we also had other people, like, asking, so wait, so is this happening in the real world? Is this just the way this world is? And yeah, this is the way that this world is. I mean, for all intents and purposes, this is the way this specific world is. Shit like this just happens. You roll with it, and then you go get a slice of pizza.
It's totally. Very, it's kind of a Hong Kong tradition.
Yeah.
Like, when you watch a movie like, Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah.
At no point does anybody question, you know, Stephen Chow flying in the air, and I mean yeah. in the air, like the stratosphere.
Yeah.
And, like, kicking ass. It just kind of happens. You take it for granted. Oh, the smoking old lady could totally kick butt. That's the way the movies are. I mean, sometimes you have to have that suspension of disbelief, and it's more present. Like, those elements are more present in, I would say, movies from Asia.
Big Man Japan.
Oh, God. Because my father hates Hong Kong cinema. He's like, I don't understand. What's with all this flying through the air? And I'm like, you watch Lord of the Rings, and you're not questioning Gandalf riding a giant eagle.
Yeah.
Talking trees.
We make an erotical movie.
Erotical. Yeah. Thank you, Asian walking stereotype.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, that's what my entire comic book series is based on. Trying to explain all this crap. But anyway,
yeah. Back to the X's.
Stop pandering. So Lucas Lee was awesome, and then of course my all time favorite is Superman, who I feel he didn't get a great role in Superman Returns, which he should come back for the next movie if they have him. Please, Warner Brothers, bring him back.
Yeah.
But Brandon Routh did a great job as the third Evil X. You know, I think. I mean, basically, all of his lines were straight from the book. And his delivery, that whole, like, I'm a badass and I know it. Like, without being over the top. Like, Lucas Lee was just awesome.
And at some changes that were made in the movie, like, for instance, he's the one that hits Knox. Knives.
And then knocks the color out of her
hand. Which I'm so happy they kept in. You know?
I can do what I want. I hate girls. I don't care. I'm a rock star.
You know, I mean, changing that, did you know, like, up his badass level at least by 7.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But what was missing from the movie, and I know that they had to do this because of time or whatever, is him and Envy falling apart isn't actually a part of it. You know, the cheating on her with the other member of the band. You know, the whole actually seeing him eat the meat.
I would say they made a lot of really interesting aesthetic choices, because as I was explaining the Raph earlier, there's the line where Envy says to Scott, you just punched my best friend so hard that he exploded. That's from the graphic novel. In the movie, she just says, you just punched my boyfriend so hard that he exploded. Mm-hmm. And that changes the entire meaning to me because, you know, in the graphic novel, her boyfriend cheats on her, and yet when Scott punches him so hard he explodes, she's still upset. She says, my best friend. That indicates, you know, it actually indicates depth to Envy because it's like, oh, this guy cheated on me, we're not going out anymore, but he's still my friend. I mean, he was in her band. And they took out anything that made Envy kind of, like, soft, or they took off the closure between her and Scott, because all they really needed was for her to be in the club at the end of the movie. And when Scott comes in and apologizes, you know, to Kim and tells young Neil, he could have just pointed at Envy and said, I'm sorry for being a douchebag. That's all you really needed. And they took that out because they liked Envy, I guess, as kind of a villainess. But she doesn't have enough time to be a real villainess in the movie.
And the revelation that, you know, he didn't just punch a hole in the moon for her, that he also did it to Ramona, was left out from the movie. Which I can understand why they left it out, but it is another thing that proves how much of a douchebag this guy actually is.
Well, I mean, when you have Kryptonian powers, you gotta use them. I mean, come on, punching a hole in the moon?
Not Kryptonian powers, vegan powers.
I partake none of the flesh, or the breast milk, or the ovum of anything. What a face!
You do know that Kryptonians are vegan, after all. They were raised in little capsules.
But they don't eat.
Well, wait, what are you talking about? They're allergic to green.
But that's kryptonite. That's not.
It's different.
All right.
And Superman is not fully Kryptonian. He eats beef and burger.
Oh, and something. Dude, the vegan police.
Oh my God, the Punisher.
As you pointed out, because I didn't even notice this in the movie, that it's freaking Thomas Jane, man.
Yeah. I loved the Punisher as the vegan police. He was totally awesome. And then just his delivery on the whole milk and eggs, bitch. It's just sort of like, I could see Frank Castle holding up a gun with a kryptonite bullet going, milk and eggs, bitch. And just blasting him. And it was so awesome. Mm-hmm. It's just so Marvel versus DC. Let's do it. Come on.
Thomas Jane also playing Jonah Hex in the short for Jonah Hex. That's
he also plays the guy with a huge penis on HBO.
Yes, he does anyway. So, yeah, go down the list. All right. Continue.
Then there's the bicurious phase.
What, her name again?
Hold on. Roxy Richter.
Yeah, Roxy Richter. Okay, yeah. Mae Whitman plays her in the movie.
Yeah.
So of course you have Anne versus versus George Michael, which is great and everything. And I don't know if you noticed. Have you ever read the Free Comic Book Day, Scott Pilgrim?
No, I actually missed it.
Okay, it's sitting right over there. You can read it after this.
Be careful with it. It's worth $77 on eBay.
Yes. Wow. Apparently it's worth $77. But the fight scene that they chose to use where Ramona is fighting for Scott is actually from that little baby right over there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that they decided to go with another Scott Pilgrim thing as opposed to the actual fight.
Well, I think the subspace subplot from the books would have been too hard to explain on a screen. Mm-hmm. So they just kind of did that Ramona will sort of fight for Scott. And it's the book is the Scott Pilgrim Odds and Ends.
Yes.
$5 from Oni Press until like the summer when everybody bought a copy and now it's $77 on eBay. No, you can't have my copy.
I mean, I guess I especially liked it because it was that we finally got to see this is the one thing Ramona did in the entire thing besides hook up with Scott is she fought for him, and I think the fight was kind of fun and the whole her sensitive spot it was hilarious, but I mean like I said the first four were really good, they were really solid, and now we get to the twins numbers 5 and 6, and really I mean. Yeah. To see Double Dragon fight the Monster Energy Drink mascot, I mean,
it was cute. It didn't really add anything.
No, it didn't. There was no incentive. We didn't learn about the twins, what their motivations were, why they're in the League of Evil Exes.
Yeah.
We got that with the other four, and then like, I mean, I get them trying to make it a musical thing, but you could have done something different than having musical avatars fight each other.
Right.
I mean it.
Well, I mean, they didn't want to use the robots.
Yeah.
That would have cost too much.
No, I would have loved to see. No, I would have loved to have seen, like, this huge thundering sound, and then suddenly these little robots.
Mm-hmm.
And then Scott going, seriously? You want me to fight this? And then they shoot these huge missiles that blast them, and then
they
get a laugh.
Or, they could have at least gotten those, like, things from Dragon Ball Z where, like, you plant them in the ground and they grow up. And
or they could have had the robots and then turned everything to 8-bit, and then 8-bit Scott would have had to beat them. That would have been funny.
That would have been funny.
That's not expensive. Just get an 8-bit, program an 8-bit thing, and that would be that.
All they needed to do was take footage from the video game.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, but yeah, and then we roll on to Gideon.
The ultimate douchebag.
All right. Compare.
Wait, what a dick!
Yes. And I totally imagine the voice from Dr. Tran saying that, too.
Actually, it should have been Paul Hader. I think it was actually missing from the
movie.
Bill Hader, sorry.
Yeah.
Because I love that in the graphic novels, that like, Gideon has stolen the power of love. What a dick! And that wasn't in the thing, and I mean they had Bill Hader doing the voice. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not have him do that one line? I mean, there's so many little ways the movie could have actually been funnier.
Yeah.
And it would not have helped it make more money this weekend.
No,
but we would have
liked it a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean we would have came out with at least one more thing to say that was amazing. I mean, of course it was amazing, but still. Okay, comparison between actual end of not of the graphic novels and end of movie.
I think the end of the movie is a much better Scott ending, because Scott makes up with knives, Scott gets the girl in the end, Scott faces Nega Scott, and he finds out everything's okay. And
the very last scene of the movie is exactly the same as the last scene of the books.
Yeah, but I mean, so yeah, there's that. That's great. But I think the book actually has a stronger ending for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We find Stephen Stills gets closure from Julie.
Yeah,
and I that's
right. Yeah, I mean the whole Joseph plotline is dropped entirely. I mean they don't. I mean,
the character isn't present in the movie.
Yeah, right. The character is not in the movie, and they actually don't record their album because of that. I mean, however, they do get a contract from Gideon. So yeah. I guess that does sort of replace
that. In the books, they suck.
Yes.
They suck really bad. Mm-hmm. And even Knives says so at the end. So in the book, you know, Ramona and Scott finally come to an understanding. They both mature and they both, you know, spend the rest of their lives together, theoretically. And you don't get anything out of, like we were talking about before, Envy. I mean, I think the book ending is a great overall ending, mm-hmm. but the movie ending is just good for Scott. And that's really ultimately who we're supposed to care about, is Scott.
Yeah.
It's not about all the ancillary characters, and there's only so much time you could fit 6 books into one movie. You know,
right.
So that the movie ending works. I like both of them. I don't really have a complaint about the movie, but, you know, I don't think I can really favor one over the other because there's certain elements missing from both that I kind of like.
All right. Okay.
Well, I definitely think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff missing in the movie by necessity because it has to be shorter, as well as the fact that Volume 6 just went on forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's so little of it that isn't the fight between Scott and Gideon. That's like the largest chunk of the book. It's huge. You're halfway through, and you're only halfway through the battle. But the movie ending I really liked because I felt it was simpler. It was easier to understand. And, of course, I love the whole, like, you know, game over, extra life thing.
Yeah.
Because, again, it reminds me of Run, Lola, Run.
Yeah.
It is an interesting way to do the, you know, to integrate that into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, it's easier for the audience to grasp a lot of the things. Like, because you remember in the book, it's, yes, Scott has gained the power of understanding. Instead, they replace it in the movie with, Scott has gained the power of self-respect. Mm-hmm. And that's important, too. And that's, like, that's much easier to grasp. Scott is learned that he needs to be mature and he needs to do things for himself, not because he may or may not get laid. That's a horrible reason to get into a fight like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You're doing it because, well, I want to date this girl and you're giving me shit about it. We got to settle this between us, not between me and Ramona or anything like that. Right. I mean, that, you know, him and Ramona is actually a separate issue from the exes when you think about it.
Yeah,
so
it is.
I really love the whole Scott has gained the power of self-respect. I thought it was a perfect way to do it. Because the audience could understand that better.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, also I think I like, even though it's kind of cheesy and it's kind of video game convention, like movie convention, the whole Ninja DDR comes back to play in the end where they both beat the crap out of Gideon.
That
was pretty cool.
Yeah, Ninja DDR needs to exist.
It totally does.
Yeah,
I would play that game.
I would play it all the time.
Yeah, we would just have Ninja DDR parties.
Yeah. The Gideon plotline, very different in the movie than it is in the books. Specifically, his motivation and also how he quote unquote controls Ramona is very different in the books than it is in the movies. I felt in the movies it was almost a cop out to have her be under his control, literally under his control, because it feels like so much more of a character thing for her to just be unable to let go of him because he was the one that quote unquote got away because he always ignored her, never paid enough attention, but she was puppy dog in love with him.
Yeah. See, but Chris said it before. Then you have to explain subspace.
Yeah. No.
And explain how it works.
No, you really don't have to though. You really don't have to. In order to make the relationship with Gideon work, none of that space, you know, subspace stuff needs to be there. You just have to explain that, yes, she has an attraction for Gideon because it was one of those unrequited love things. That's it.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, they didn't do nearly enough of the whole, you know what, I don't love you, Scott is fighting for me, Scott's doing this for me, I don't give a crap about you thing. I mean... Mm-hmm. They did the whole chip falling off and then him kneeing her and her kneeing him in the crotch.
Yeah.
Him kneeing her in the crotch wouldn't do a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like...
It would hurt.
It would hurt, but it wouldn't be nearly as painful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exponentially
more
painful.
Wait, hold on. Okay, Chris, does it hurt when you get kneed in the crotch?
It does hurt, though I will admit there are other ways to hit a chick that will hurt a lot more.
You punch me in the boob! Nice.
That was... Well coordinated. Good job,
sir. Yeah, all right, okay.
Well done, sir.
Yeah. At the same time, I don't like in the books the whole, you know, X's and carbonite thing. You know, I mean, that was
really stupid.
I did not like that at all.
That makes him more desperate and more like it totally plays against the whole unrequited love thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, my perfect ending is just unrequited love and then getting over it. That's it.
Yeah. See, I think the thing is, like in the movie, I think if they had put Envy at the end, he should just be like, oh, screw you. I don't need you. I got Ramona back now. Like, that would have been even better. It would have made him more of a douche.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, there are certain things missing, but, I mean, I get the ending. I like it. I'm not saying it's the worst ending ever or anything.
Yeah,
but
I know.
It works.
And I mean, the going out for brunch was fucking brilliant.
Oh, I love Negroscott. Final battle.
I actually am perfectly okay without the Negroscott battle because at that point he'd already gained self-respect.
Yeah, so he doesn't need to fight himself to get it.
Yeah, and you know, the whole, oh, yeah, no, he's actually a pretty nice, nice guy. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
The problem is the Negroscott fight wasn't meant to be the climax of the series, even though it's the climax of Scott's character development.
Yes.
But the problem is because they had cut out all of the Kim Pine stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, there was nowhere to fit that in. Except at the end, but again, because the climax is supposed to be the battle against Gideon, it's a bunch of narrative shifting being around.
Well, you know what, Chris? Let me let you touch on the whole Kim stuff, and also which Gideon fight you prefer.
You know, she didn't really have much of a role in the books, like when you think about it, anyway, because we get the backstory that she used to date Scott, and they really had this thing going. You know, because I like the narrative trickery that Brian Lee O'Malley plays, where you watch it, you know, you're reading it, and it's kind of like, oh, there's this girl Lisa, she seems really cool, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, Scott's with Kim, not Lisa, and you know, the thing is, they didn't have time to do any of that, so I mean, it's understandable.
Oh, we did get it in the animated.
Yeah, they did the little animated thing, you know, just so you know, well, this is how, you know. Well, actually, the problem with the animated thing is since there's no follow-up on it, because when we later on learn that Scott was remembering it wrong, and that, in fact, he never told Kim he was moving away, it was Lisa who told her.
Yeah.
And, of course, the big thing is that the whole fight, the River City Ransom-esque fight with Simon Lee, didn't really happen, and Simon Lee was just some skinny guy who Kim was actually dating. I mean, that's again, it's too much for the movie. I don't mind leaving it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to me that, like, the actress they picked to play Kim, I think she's cute, but I think for some reason she's too ugly for me. Because, like, she has that...
Allison Pill?
Yeah, she has that... Well, I think it might be the makeup they put on her, because they give her that nest of hair.
Yeah the whole, like... thing,
yeah, they make her just very, very dark.
They made her very butch.
That you're kind of wondering what's the appeal there, because there's no delicate side to the character.
But she's hilarious. Her deadpan is always awesome.
Oh, totally.
It's like, because we suck. Because we suck. Yes.
Yeah.
Don't tell
me. The best line. You know, there's two versions of it. You know, like, you know, Scott, if your life had a face, I would punch it.
It's like, yeah, wait, what?
And then later on, doesn't she say something like, you know, Scott, if your life had balls,
I would punch it.
And she's great in the animated too, because it's just like, oh, Scott, I was hoping it would be you.
Yeah,
I mean, she's like Ben Steining it almost, you know.
I think that they did that intentionally, just to, because I think people are so used to her being like that.
And Chris, with the whole, you know, Gideon controlling Ramona thing, was that a cop out for you, or I mean, did you prefer that or not prefer it? What
I thought it didn't do anything, because it was like, oh yeah, it turns out Ramona was controlled. Oh look, she's got a chip on her. It didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Because like in the books, it was always consistent. Like, oh, you broke up with Gideon. He's one of your exes, right? And she doesn't answer because she never really broke up with him. That's the point. She's still hanging on to him. And then in the movie, saying, oh, she's controlling him. That's why she's sitting there by the throne. It was a waste.
I think it's an attempt to make her more sympathetic, and it didn't work at all. It's just, oh, so you're just a literal, like, you're literally his bitch.
It was very movie. It was very movie. I mean, where they could have gone with that is not where they went, and whatever. I mean, it's one of the few flaws in the movie, I think.
Yeah, where I would have loved... See, the thing is, I would have loved to have seen, like, when he's dead, quote-unquote, and he's in subspace, I would love to have seen her turn her head and then watch him enter her mind and see, like you said, like in the book, see Gideon there and how he has a grip over her.
Right.
And then maybe have him fight the Gideon in her head, and then...
I don't like the whole fighting in the head thing anyway. I don't know, I would be okay with that.
Something like tearing it down and sort of like...
I just would have been okay with at least one scene of you know, Scott being inside of her head, seeing the, you know, sitting like a puppy dog thing, and then... We get explanation for that later on. You know?
Yeah, yeah, and then maybe you know that crumbles because she realizes she really loves Scott, and then he wakes up with the one up. She pulls the. Mm-hmm. I really want to see the Sword of Love. Damn it!
Yes, I know.
They're there.
It's a cool sword. Well, all right. Well, let me touch on real quick. Steven Stills, I thought, was more likable in this movie than he was in the entire graphic novels, and I'm okay with that. Steven Stills was fucking awesome in this movie.
Crash and the boys were awesome, especially Drum Girl.
The whole horrible part. Spoiler, they die in the movie.
Yeah,
they totally do.
It's a throwaway death, and that kind of annoys me. I'm like, that was unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, they killed Crash and one boy. They didn't kill the drummer.
All right.
Trasha?
Because you can't kill an 8-year-old girl, after all. Yeah.
Well, you can try to, because that's what Kick-Ass did, awesome.
I know, but yes, Steven Stills, pretty damn cool. Kim Pine, while just sort of there, was you know, still
okay. We are a sex bomb, and we're to sell out and make money.
But I just yes.
She's funny. She has her moments.
Young Neil
was terrific.
We haven't talked about Young Neil at all. Young Neil was right, dead on.
So Neil, what do you play? Zelda, Tetris, Final Fantasy. Man, that's a hard question. That's so Neil.
And the look in his eye. When Scott was like, you play better bass than me, I dub thee Neil.
Yes, that was, he's like, yes, my life is now fulfilled. It has meaning.
Character arc right there.
Yeah, totally. You know,
perfect.
Because I don't think he does any of that stuff in the actual book.
He doesn't play bass in the book.
No.
I mean, his big moment, of course, is just when Scott introduces young Neil to his sister. And he says this, you've never met? That's so crazy. This is my, you know, my sister Stacy. This is Neil. And of course, so there's like a double whammy there because, I mean, I'm sure he's happy because, you know, oh my God, I'm Neil. But I also interpret it as like, oh, Stacy's like the same age as Neil and she probably would actually like him. Yeah. So, you know.
And they wind up together, right?
No, you never don't? See it.
Oh, okay, all right.
It's just, you can imagine.
Yeah. It's implied.
Yeah. And Stacy Pilgrim, by the way, because we haven't mentioned her at all. What'd you think of the performance?
I thought she was pretty good. I mean, she plays. It's funny because you almost forget she's the younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like you think she's the older
sister.
Well,
you're supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's how immature and Scott
was
is.
Was it not the best recurring gag? The whole Stacy Wallace thing. And it's like we told you, Wallace. Well, how do Wallace? He's a phone in his hand.
Yes,
that was hilarious. Well,
that and the whole damn it, Wallace.
Not again. Making out with the boyfriend.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Oh, minor spoiler for the game. When you fight Matthew Battelle, it cuts to the hall where they're playing Rocket, and you see Crash and Boys on the stage, and then you go up to the balcony, and it's Stacy's boyfriend and Wallace making out constantly.
Nice.
While you fight Matthew Battelle. They don't stop.
Fantastic.
No one stops to look. He's just making out like a. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Oh, and the man who knows everyone. That was great casting.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Because he actually looks like the character.
He does. And the whole, like, I love the. Do you know a girl looks like this? Yes, that's Ramona Flowers. Just this enunciation.
That's Ramona Flowers?
Yeah. It's like, I totally know who this is based on a really crappy drawing.
Yeah, and they were originally going to go with an actual Brian Lee O'Malley picture of Ramona, and then Brian Lee O'Malley said, "Nah, let me draw you this."
No, yeah. It's because it's inaccurate for like Scott to draw this picture of Ramona because you remember in the comic he actually takes his hands and he sticks his fingers in front of his ears.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Do you know a girl with hair like this?" And then Camille's like, "Oh, you mean Ramona?"
It's even funnier.
Yeah, I know. You can't see what we're doing, but I'm just saying it's basically you hold your fingers like right next to your between your eyes and your ears.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, I mean the whole that crappy drawing with the doodles, it's about the same thing.
Yeah.
I love the Brian Lee O'Malley drawings in the movie, by the way.
Like, oh, they were awesome.
You know, like when he's doing they have the drawings of the bands they're facing against.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. Well, and Brian Lee O'Malley, you know, he actually had involvement in the movie, which is always good because when you try to shut out the creators, nothing good ever really comes of that.
One gripe.
Yeah.
The pee bar wasn't long enough. No one pees in 5 seconds, please.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
I'll give you that.
The pee bar is way too fast.
And I could have done with a save point.
Yeah.
That's my favorite scene in all of the books. It's like, what's that? I think it's a save point. Save point? I have to get over there before, you know?
Yeah.
It's just,
damn it! No!
Well, the girl interrupts him and goes, what are you doing here? And
yeah.
I missed my save point. Four out of five.
Yeah, four out of five. I think if they add those little things in we were talking about, it would be like easily four and a half, maybe even five out of five.
Totally owning the Blu-ray. There's no doubt about that. Especially if they do a Blu-ray DVD, which I love that they've been doing that lately. That
the combo?
The combo packs are a great idea.
They're doing Rocky like that. It's coming out in October.
Oh, really?
I looked it up.
Awesome. Sweet. I'll have to...
Rocky.
I think so.
We should do a Rocky marathon.
We already did that.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh.
what do you give it, Chris?
I prefer not to rank movies of that sort, so I will not rank it anything out of anything, but...
How many big toes do you give it?
I'm going to kick you in the nuts later. It's a good movie. Go see it. That's all. I'm not ranking it.
If Ian's life had balls, she'd kick them?
I kick them anyway.
That's true. She has.
If Ian was a real-life person, you'd kick him?
Yes, and I am a real-life person, and she's probably going to kick me when this is over. Thanks. I hate you.
You're welcome.
So you gave it a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
All right, okay.
All right, go see it, or I'll punch you in the face.
Definitely go see it, because it might not be in theaters much longer, and that makes me sad, because it only made the 10 mil in the first weekend. It still has a chance to make back its money, both on the foreign take and on eventual Blu-ray DVDs, because that's where Kick-Ass made back its money. Kick-Ass was the number one released Blu-ray /DVD when it came out. It topped the charts by a ton. It made more money in that first week than it did in the theaters. Yeah.
Wow. So all I have to say is la 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 la. Okay.
All right. I think we're basically done. Any final thoughts?
If you have a PS3, Scott Pilgrim the Video Game is PSN exclusive, and it is immensely awesome.
It's eventually coming out on Xbox, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's got like 2 or 3 months head start, so it is really cool, and there are a lot of fun references in it.
Should I get a PS3?
Yes, you should. Get 160.
Do you think it's... Well, okay. I've wondered this about PS3s and Xboxes. Can you buy your own external and hook it up?
Yeah. That's how I plan on upgrading my hard drive.
All right.
Like, I have a 40 gig hard drive. I'm gonna back it up on my external and then put a terabyte in there as well.
So you can actually do that, right?
Yeah.
Take any special formatting?
No, it's USB. Well, it's FAT32.
Okay.
As long as your hard drive is FAT32 formatted, you should be fine.
All right, cool. I'll have to remember that, because I might wind up getting like a one terabyte and just getting an enclosure and doing it that way.
If I wasn't like, if I didn't have all my like videos and all that stuff on my external, I would totally do that. All
right, cool. Okay. All right, cool. Any final thoughts, Chris?
Nah.
Just go see it?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, that works. Okay. She wants me to stop asking her stuff, so I'll stop asking her stuff. This was going to air as part of an episode, but I think this is basically an episode at this point, because we're an hour and 14 minutes in.
0.5, cop out.
So, no, not even a 0.5. This might just be a full thing with an episode thing. We're sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service, dcbservice.com. I'm going to actually give you a full ad here, because we might as well. But since I recorded this last month, all of those things I said are out of date, so I got to say this real quick here. Utopian number one is $149, 50% off of $299. Mark Guggenheim and Tara Butters on this one. A new superhero book for Mark Guggenheim, who you might know from the TV or Amazing Spider-Man. So that should be pretty sweet. Batman The Dark Knight, number one, 75% off for 99 cents this month. Regular price of $3.99. David Finch, art and story on this one. Let's see how the artist does on the writing end here as Bruce Wayne returns to the Bat Books. And this will be his Bat Book. Woot woot. And Thunderbolts, number 150, written by Jeff Parker, penciled by Kev Walker. This one is 50% off of $4.99 for $2.49, but you get 96 pages of story here, so that certainly makes up for it. And make sure to use the promo code of CT8 to get your additional 8% off on your first order with DCBS.
Remember, CT8.
Thank you very much.
CT great.
DCBService.com. Suhu is at Geeks Unite if he feels like it. Chris is at nonfictioncomics.net. Make sure to check that out. Nonfictioncomics.net. And the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Or check out the forums at thecomicforums.com. You're still hosted by Comic Geek Speak, guys, over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And the League, your comic book podcast, over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. And please make Rat shut up. So for Ian, I am everyone. And as always, there's always time for comics.
Hey, look, your neighbor's TV.
And as always, there's always time for comics. That means you can shut up now. I hate you. Well, now I am. So now everybody can stop being funny now that the microphone is actually on.
Cop out.
You are busy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're deleting things from iTunes. It's very difficult. Could you at least mute your iTunes while we're doing this?
No.
So we don't get ran. Thank you. Yeah. Beeping noises can be fun.
Oh, look. I got a message from him.
All right.
Hold on. Tag it.
So.
Let's have a new DDR party.
Okay. Oh, yeah? You finally got rid of all the duplicates?
Yeah.
Yay! Damn.
5,547 items.
Nice.
In my iTunes library.
And all your playlists still work?
Oh, yeah. You can't find out
for now. Alright. Okay.
Because then, there's always a licensing music shit.
Yeah, and then we have to pay.
I just wanted to know if they were all, like, I mean, just clicking on them and seeing if they all have their... Hmm? Oh, okay. Oh, well. Anyway. This month, give you some of the specials that are going on. If I can find them real quick here. Let's see, is it starred? No, it's not, but I'm going to get it right now. Yeah, Chris already ordered it, so she's gonna have it. Yeah.
For some reason, someone sent me the whole thing. I was going to buy it. I think I might buy it.
Yeah.
Before the movie comes out. Hello, Futurama!
Hello.
Hi! Get up, Fry!
And
get up, Fry!
That's gone. Alright, what were you saying?